Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 2nd of April 2021.
The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited and will be read and presented by Vara and Tom Williams.
Hello.
Hello.
The first main headline story this week is Housing Fears for Golf Club. Residents fear plans are afoot for housing on South Winchester Golf Club. Campaigners and locals believe the site could be developed after seeing mystery contractors surveying the land over the past few weeks. This comes after the City Council's recent Strategic Housing and Employment Land Availability Assessment, called SHELAR or something for short, concluded that the site was enough space for 1,071 houses. Now Save South Winchester Campaign Group, which is also battling the Royal Downs scheme for 5,000 homes between Oliver's Battery and Hursley, is stepping in. They believe developers are looking to promote sites for housing whilst the City Council draws up its new local plan. Public consultation on the plan closes on April the 12th. Member Constant Leach said, "This is our chance to tell Winchester City Council what we think about land use, housing needs and places for development until 2038. Let's send a clear message that there is a much better way to deliver the required housing than in the countryside to the southwest of Winchester." Concerned residents have been taking to social media to share information. A site map naming Bloor Homes Southern as the client was photographed and shared online. In 2019, Bloor Homes developed Basingstoke Golf Course into homes. One local resident was told by the contractors that the work was for the Environment Agency, but when the Chronicle checked, the agency denied any knowledge of this. In a letter to members, General Manager Roger Tomey said the contractors are from a property specialist. It said, "As you may be aware, Winchester City Council are currently undergoing a strategic local planning consultation and, as with many golf clubs, South Winchester Golf Club, alongside Royal Winchester Golf Club, has been identified as a possible site for housing in Winchester at some point in the future. This planning consultation will look at housing needs and land supply in and around the city for up to 30 years into the future. In conjunction with this process, there is a survey being undertaken at the club by a property specialist this week to establish the site's suitability for future development. It is being conducted now during the government's COVID closure so that there is no disruption to golf. Unfortunately, speculation, which I feel it is important to address, there is speculation. South Winchester Golf Club is and remains a key club within the Crown Golf Group, one of the longest established golf club operators in the UK. Regardless of the outcome of the public consultation or surveys, you should be aware that the land at South Winchester Golf Course is subject to a deed of covenant in favour of the members, ensuring it remains as a golf club until at least 2026. This prohibits any development and is a highly unusual degree of protection for the course. The Chronicle has contacted both Bloor Homes and South Winchester Golf Course to make further inquiries. Neither responded before the paper went to press. South Winchester Golf Club is a young course, only opening in the mid-1990s on Pitt Manor Farm.
The second headline is headed Greta's Sculpture Unveiled Amid National Criticism. The controversial bronze sculpture of Greta Thunberg was installed and unveiled at Winchester University on Tuesday. Entitled Make a Difference, it is believed to be the world's first life-size statue of the Swedish climate change activist. The event was not held in front of an audience, but the university said that another unveiling will take place when guests can gather on the campus. Since being announced earlier this month, the artwork has attracted severe criticism, with debate spread to both national newspapers and television. Winchester University Students' Union also came out against the statue, which cost £23,760. President Megan Ball, Vice President Education and Welfare Victoria Hurley, and Vice President Activities Eileen O'Dwyer released a joint statement. They said, "The year in which this artistic piece is being delivered is one which has seen unimaginable financial impacts. Students have seen staff redundancies, library cuts, and limitations of provisions. They are being charged full tuition fees for an academic year that is anything but normal. There is a crippling mental health crisis among students, and well-being services are crying out for additional support. In our view, the unveiling of the statue next week shows that these issues are not their priorities. We appreciate that the statue was commissioned in 2019 as part of the wider West Downs building budget. We acknowledge that this was not repurposed from other budgets, such as those for mental health or student services. However, £23,760 is a considerable amount of money for a statue that the student union had no input and say upon. The union has urged the university to consider the timing and impact of this unveiling at such an unprecedented period for student well-being. Students should have the opportunity to see whether the cost of the statue has or will be matched for well-being provision." Winchester UCU branch branded the statue a vanity project for the retiring Vice-Chancellor and was concerned at the lack of transparency over the project. But speaking at the unveiling, Vice-Chancellor Professor Joy Carter justified the cost. "We are aware of some concerns raised about the financing of the statue," she said. "The statue was commissioned in 2019 as part of the West Downs project from funds which could be only spent on that building. No money was diverted from student support or from staffing to finance the West Downs project. Indeed, the university has spent £5.2 million this year on student support, processed £382,000 in government hardship funds for students, in addition to our own hardship fund, established a new IT access fund of £100,000, grown the teams that support student well-being, and spent £1.5 million additional funding to support teaching, learning, and health and safety during the pandemic." Debate over the sculpture has also made national newspapers and even featured on Good Morning Britain last week. Speaking on the show, journalist Ella Whelan said she disagreed with the sculpture due to Greta's politics. "When it comes to statues, the past year has seen endless discussion about politics, so it's important to look at the politics behind Greta Thunberg, particularly the school strikes," she said. "It's notable that the student union at Winchester University is not supporting the unveiling of the statue. They're actually very annoyed about it because there have been library cuts and staff redundancies and are ticked off the university had spent £24,000 on a statue." That's good journalism. Whether or not she'll inspire students like the uni intends, well, the students don't seem to be happy. More importantly, Greta Thunberg's politics, like Extinction Rebellion or school climate strikes, are all about anti-innovation. "We shouldn't do anything, shouldn't affect the world, and the world will be bowed down to." She added, "Having that kind of inspiration on the uni is not the kind of inspiration that it should want to give to students." Ms. Whelan added that students should be inspired to find ways out of the climate crisis and not bow down to nature. But Azed Rehman, who also appeared on the show, disputed these comments. He said, "First of all, we need to recognise that we are in the midst of a climate crisis where millions of people's lives and livelihoods are being impacted. This is something that has been something the governments and corporations have been ignoring for decades. Mr. Richman said that Greta had inspired others to force the climate crisis into government agendas. Ellen speaks that slightly disingenuously, because her magazine, of course, is being bankrolled by rich billionaires who don't want action on climate change, he added. So there we are.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Duggan. K. Barbara Ann Duggan. Peacefully at Richard Moss House, aged 81. Bichard. Violet Elizabeth Bichard. After a short illness, aged 88. Broderick. Peggy Primrose Broderick, peacefully at St. John's Moorside, aged 97. Broomfield, Stuart Broomfield, in Winchester, aged 72. Cowie, Jackie Cowie, peacefully at home, aged 78. Emerson, Nancy Emerson, peacefully, aged 91. Harris, Anthony Robert Harris at Mountbatten Court. Manley, Michael Roger Manley, aged 83. Morrison, George Morrison at Kidminster. And finally, Pengetley, Andrew William Pengetley at home, age 78.
Christian Comment this week is written by Nigel Hemming, senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church, and is headed Offensive Compassion. The story of Jonah is one of the shortest and strangest books in the Old Testament. No one behaves as you might expect, and it's very hard to see how the main character can be thought of as a positive role model for God's people. Jonah, the supposed prophet of God, is tasked with preaching to Israel's violent enemies in the city of Nineveh. But he deliberately boards a ship heading in the opposite direction. Even after God sends a storm to get his attention, Jonah ignores him, and it takes a bunch of heathen sailors to convince him to face his God. The sailors are saved after reluctantly, at his own request, throwing Jonah overboard. Expecting to drown, Jonah is swallowed by a big fish, and after 3 days and nights in the fish's belly, despairing and close to death, he prays, finally calling on God for help. The fish vomits him up on the shore. I can only imagine what he must have smelt like. God repeats his command to go and preach to Nineveh, and this time Jonah delivers his hard-hitting message. 40 days and Nineveh will be overturned. Against all odds, the people repent immediately. Dressing in sackcloth, completely changing their ways, and crying to God in the hope of mercy. In response, God doesn't destroy them, and, as it appears, he was originally planning to do. Jonah, however, is really angry, and sits outside the city in a sulk. We discover he didn't run away because of fear, but because, much to his chagrin, he suspected that God would ultimately choose to exercise the mercy he was known for. Jonah prayed to the Lord. Isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? That is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew that you were a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. That's Jonah 4:2. Jonah may know these words, but he's completely missed the truth behind them, mainly God's heart of compassion. God challenges Jonah, and the book abruptly ends, leaving us guessing at his response. But the story challenges all of us. How will we respond to the mercy of God, which is available to everyone who calls on his name, despite what they may have done? Centuries later, we can only answer this question by honestly reflecting on the Easter story, which Jonah foreshadows in so many ways. God is a big fan of second chances, and everyone stands equal before the cross of Jesus. As Tim Mackey states, the mercy of God is remarkable, for my enemies and for me when I struggle with the fact that he loves my enemies. This Easter, may we know the very real compassion of God as we reflect on Jesus' cruel and innocent death. And may we also know the life of the Spirit as we celebrate his glorious resurrection. And that's from Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Moving on from to letters to the editor. The first letter is from Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Winchester, and it's about Silver Hill. Over the 20 years or so we have been waiting for Silver Hill to be developed, there have been several changes in the makeup of council committees and even changes in political parties in charge. Have they been responsible for the delays? Or, due to many changes in council senior officers, have they been responsible? Money has been spent and various consultants retained, and we are still not much further ahead. If one looks at Winchester, maybe uncharitably, most of the derelict, sadly unlooked-after areas around the city are council-owned. This seems to me to be very poor stewardship of supposed assets held in common for us all. Answers, excuses, reasons are not needed, but some action really is. Winchester has a large supply of talented people who could help with the master plans or design statements required so badly. We can help in partnership with the council, if asked. And that was from Terry Gould of Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And a second letter on the subject of Silver Hill from Sue Larkham. Sir, having two top-flight architects working in the city, I have often wondered why the City Council, in their wisdom, have chosen not to involve them in the plans for Silver Hill. Very sadly, we lost Hugh Thomas, one of these architects, recently. I remember some time ago seeing his suggested drawings for the development, which, if my memory serves me correctly, were largely ignored by the council. His suggestion to reinvent the old bus garage, sadly now demolished, create a continental-style covered market, was a great idea, as was opening up the old underground waterways. What a wonderful legacy that would have been if his plan had been taken forward. It was therefore with something almost approaching encouragement that I read in a recent edition of the Hampshire Chronicle that the council are now meeting Hugh Petter from Adam Architects to discuss their ideas and plans for the site. Is this truly their epiphany moment? We can but live in hope. And that's from Sue Larkham of Chilcombe.
And one more letter about the architecture in Winchester. This one's from Judith Martin. Recently, the Pritzker Prize for Architecture, one of the most important international awards, was won by two French architects whose motto is Never Demolished. For the first time, it's been given not to practitioners who create new works, but to a pair who rescue and refashion earlier work that would otherwise have been lost, because to do otherwise would be expensive and wasteful. To contrast this high-minded endeavour with local matters, Winchester City Council now proposes to spend £4.2 million to develop cultural uses in King's Walk, pending subsequent demolition and redevelopment of what was Silver Hill. And it will spend £500,000 to demolish Friar's Gate Surgery, bought for £5.2 million, to make open space. This comes after the latest £500,000 spent on consultants, JLL, as reported on March the 18th. To be clear, creative quarters and well-designed open spaces are things I've promoted for many years. Some of the findings that have emerged from yet another survey are also long-standing. Too few independent shops, insufficient venues for all kinds of music, masses of creativity, but no coordinated support. Since Winchester last had an arts officer, useful and interesting ad hoc venues like the laundry and the yard have been lost or threatened, while expensive plans like those for the goods shed off Bar End Road come to nothing. I'm not quite as high-mindedly preservationist as the French architects. I would let King's Walk go. It's a major part of the central Winchester regeneration site and impedes other thinking. But Friar's Gate should be kept. It would make a fine and less wildly overambitious creative quarter. It's peripheral to the central Winchester regeneration site and would not impinge on future development. Remember what Ashburton Court looked like. Vast grey horizontal slabs before it was given a vertical, environmentally friendly makeover about 15 years ago. Good architects could do something similar with Friar's Gate, to make a creative quarter facing into the wider site and bordering the stream. The rest of the site should finally be developed by different, smallish-scale developers with local architects, and the whole money-wasting, misconceived, oversized, grandiosed concept that began with Thornfields, and which Winchester City Council cabinet and officers still apparently dream of, can be put behind us. And that comes from Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester.
Harry Johnson Hill writes, "Why Greta? Sir, I must question the university's intention to erect a statue of Greta Thunberg following on their endorsement of the Godsfield industrialisation. They're hardly in locals' good books. As someone of student age, I can see that friends and local students are unhappy at the lack of reduction in university fees. A bronze statue seems costly, £23,000 to be precise, near the entire cost for a student's three-year education at an inappropriate time. If a statue of an avid environmentalist must be built, why not David Attenborough, someone who may have actually heard of Winchester?" And that's from Harry Johnson Hill of Peninsula Road, West Hill, Winchester.
And a second one about the statue. This comes from Adrian Brophy. "The university's planned Greta Thunberg statue should be applauded, given that her message and mission is relevant to every one of us. Sadly, those crying bar humbug seem to have bought into innuendos discrediting Thunberg's credibility. However, there's no doubting her iconic status on the global stage and influence. As an example to young people and students, it's hard to beat. There's also the waste of money brigade getting het up over how the university allocated £23,760 for the sculpture within a £50 million budget for the rather stunning West Downs campus. Maybe they're unaware how much statues can cost these days. Grantham is unveiling a £300,000 statue of Thatcher. Plymouth is paying £700,000 for an Anthony Gormley sculpture. A wonderful bronze of Sir Tom Moore was just created for a very reasonable £60,000, still twice the cost of the Thunberg. Meanwhile, a current crowdfunding project is seeking to raise £150,000 for a statue of Licoricea of Winchester. These costs are worth keeping in mind when deciding if this is a meltdown about value or values." And that's from Adrian Brophy, Oliver's Battery Road, North Winchester.
Andy Cole writes about Hyde Street. "Sir, in response to Mr. Llewellyn's letter regarding Hyde Street petition, one of the canvassers that Mr. Llewellyn is referring to is myself. And while we had a robust but good-natured conversation, he has been very selective in the points he wishes to highlight. The petition is not and never has been just about the temporary closure of Hyde Street, a main B-type road, and the consequences this has for Worthy Lane residents. It seeks to highlight and draw attention to the wider implications of the road closure has had on traffic congestion throughout Winchester, not to mention increased levels of pollution and noise that come with stationary vehicles snarling up the approaches to the city centre. While Worthy Lane residents are directly impacted, it would be wrong to imply that we are motivated solely by our own interests. Living in an area accessed from Hyde Street, it is not entirely unexpected that Mr. Llewellyn has taken the stance he has in assumedly supporting the closure. He and other residents living along this road will no doubt feel the benefits of less traffic and be enjoying a much improved living environment. Having discussed the situation with local business community, we know that most do not, unsurprisingly, hold the same view and are frustrated at being kept in the dark by the council. On the subject of not offering constructive alternatives to the Hyde Street closure, a large number of residents have engaged with local councillors since June 2020 and put forward proposals that would have been as effective and less divisive. Suffice it to say, these were rejected and in some instances not even responded to. Signees of the petition were encouraged to look at and participate in the Hampshire County Council's online active travel plan proposal. It remains unclear, apart from a selective letter dropped by the council to certain areas of Winchester, how this consultation has been advertised to the wider public. That's from Andy Cole of Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And here's a letter from Dr. Anne Russell. I have seen at close hand the devastating consequences of whiplash injuries to the head. The injuries caused are particular patterns of bleeding around the brain, which can lead to damage and significant social consequences for all involved. A pedestrian or cyclist struck by part of a vehicle travelling at speed is at risk, possibly seriously, and the injuries may not necessarily be apparent at the time of the incident. Our council has a duty of care to all residents as well as our much-needed visitors. The proposed active travel plan goes a long way to addressing this, and some of our most pressing public health issues at a time when money is scarce. Quite a big bang for the buck. I would urge anyone who journeys along the Roman roads of our city to respond positively to this project. And that's from Dr. Anne Russell of Hyde Street, Winchester.
A letter from Chris Beddoes, chairman of Save South Winchester Campaign Group, is about Royaldown. Sir, the consultation for Your Place, Your Plan has been open for several weeks, and the members of the Save South Winchester Campaign Group, SSWCG, have been looking carefully at both the content of the draft plan and the consultation questions. We echo the City Council's calls for as many people as possible to make their views known. Although a lengthy draft plan with 12 accompanying documents makes understanding and responding to the many questions not an easy task, the SSWCG believes that none of the four housing options offers the best choice, and two of them include the risk of large-scale developments on greenfield land south of Winchester. The Save South Winchester petition attracted 5,000 signatures, and the campaign counts 1,300 Facebook followers who share our concerns. There is a preferable and more sustainable fifth option, which the Chronicle described on March the 18th, which will avoid this, and we urge the City Council to consider this closely. As announced in the Save South Winchester demonstration on February the 28th, we now offer guidance to these supporters to help their input into Your Place, Your Plan. We have tried to get to the essence of what a local plan should be, which is how to deliver sustainable new development. Supporters can respond either simply to this essence of where to build new homes, or in more detail to the longer consultation. We urge the City Council to consider the fifth option, and also urge Winchester District residents to look for our guidance and support. That is from Chris Beddoes, Chairman of the Save South Winchester campaign group.
This letter is headed Paint Job. It comes from Stephen Stamford. In August 2020, somebody dropped a large tin of paint onto the pavement in Wales Street, about 50 metres north of the Bright Horizons nursery, resulting in unsuspecting pedestrians treading it along the path. I contacted Hampshire County Council and was sent an email informing me that my inquiry had been passed to a third party. After 7 months of no action, I contacted them again on March the 5th to be told the third party was Winchester City Council. I then contacted their street clean department and awaited a response. On Monday, March the 15th, I received an email from Ian Burt, contract monitoring officer, explaining the pavements were the responsibility of Hampshire County Council, and their highways engineer has stated that the only option would be to resurface the pavement, which would not be viable. Are we to believe that between the two councils there is nobody employed who can spray some paint remover from a high-powered gun, as used on graffiti? Or are the residents of this area going to be left with something that resembles an abandoned back alley? Would the outcome be the same if the location was Chilbolton Avenue? Says Stephen Stamford of Wales Street, Winnell.
The final letter is from Eileen Berry and headed City Should Be Proud of Hannah. Sir, as we move forward and hopefully come out of this pandemic, it's good to see that one of our own from Winchester achieved making it to the final four on ITV's on Saturday, The Voice. Not only did she have a voice that was unique, a range that was superb and had so much feeling put into her performance, she had also a wonderful personality. Okay, she didn't win, but for me personally, she was a winner. Having many years ago auditioned on Huey Green's Opportunity Knocks, I failed before I even started. To be able to sing was not enough. I needed all the wonderful attributes mentioned above, which I did not have. I would like to congratulate Hannah Williams. Winchester should be very proud of her. She is homegrown. There is not much in the news that is so heartfelt and heartlifting. The wish of many people is that she goes on to bigger and better things in her singing career. If she was to make an album, I would buy it. She is that good. That is from Eileen Berry of Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836, email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is headed "Why the seeming embarrassment?" As public unveilings of statues go, it was rather surreal. No press invite in these COVID times, no problem. We expected the university to supply a photograph of two of dignitaries unveiling the statue of the environmental activist Greta Thunberg. The photos arrived, for which many thanks. But where were the people? Greta stood alone, like a flotsam left on a beach. The project has been controversial, attracting national and international media attention, with teaching unions and students saying the money could have been spent on more important things. One would think the university was embarrassed. It need not be, and this paper is surprised by the seeming loss of confidence. The statue will challenge us to think of ways of tackling the climate crisis and tread more lightly on this planet. For those of you who say Greta Thunberg has never been to Winchester, so? As much as anything, she is a symbol of young people rising up to demand change. We have a statue of King Alfred, a great man rooted in this city. But the past, the message that Greta carries, is just as important. It is the future.
And now we have first person, which comes from Khalid Aziz and is headed Buses and Planes. Curious how we approach transport. This week we've seen two conflicting aspects of our confusion on how we like to get about. Bus travel, for the masses, started out with the omnibus, which, as any Latin scholar know, means for all. Certainly that was the intent when omnibuses started up in the 19th century. Initially, omnibuses were horse-drawn, but the nags were soon replaced by the internal combustion engine. And that infernal engine is what these days causes all the trouble in our carbon-conscious era. Buses have managed to rapidly move down the road of replacing their motive power with electricity and even hydrogen. Conceivably, smelly diesel buses will be completely phased out to be replaced by alternate fuelled vehicles, perhaps even as soon as 2025. Not so with aircraft. Initially only for the wealthy, low-cost carriers have meant air travel is these days affordable for all, with, incredibly, fares that are cheaper per mile than bus travel. For fuel, aeroplanes are still stuck with 28 second kerosene paraffin, to older Brits who can remember SO Blue, the same stuff that powers oil-fired central heating. And we all know that is bad because everyone keeps telling us. Electric aircraft have flown and proven the concept that we are some way off being able to fly the Atlantic in anything other than a jet. Next Thursday, the full Eastleigh Borough Council will decide on whether to grant planning permission to extend Southampton Airport's runway by 164 metres. That's 538 feet in old money. After its eight-strong Eastleigh Local Area Committee narrowly voted to reject the plan. Such applications trigger knee-jerk reactions from all the usual suspects who arrange their tanks on each other's lawns and fire away in a dialogue of the death. Such is the nature of the public consultation process. There's no doubt that currently aircraft emit carbon dioxide, so let's have as few as possible. In fact, let's ban them all. But far more carbon is down to the construction industry. So let's ban house building, eh? Has Aziz lost another marble? Such a suggestion is ludicrous. Of course it is. As is suggesting that limiting the runway length at Southampton will be a final nail in the coffin of nasty aviation. The runway length at Eastleigh hasn't changed since they were ferrying Spitfires in the Second World War. You may have noticed planes have come on a bit since then. Modern aircraft are bigger, they are more fuel efficient, and they are quieter. Bigger planes mean more passengers per aircraft movement, itself more carbon friendly. Bigger planes fly further, which means fewer passengers from the surrounding area tripping up the M3 to Heathrow and round the M25 to Gatwick in their internally combusted, for the present, cars. What will stop polluting air travel is a lack of demand and or the advent of alternative aircraft fuel. They're on that, but it's going to take longer than cleaning up the buses did. There's no evidence that demand for air travel, business or pleasure, is waning. So the choice is simple. Extend the runway and allow larger, quieter, more fuel-efficient aircraft with greater range to serve the people of Hampshire. or let the airport wither. Let airport jobs go elsewhere. Jobs which, by the way, range across the whole employment spectrum, from baggage handling to hospitality, security to traffic controllers. Let the jobs go to Bournemouth, where they have three long runways. Well, strictly speaking, six if you're a pilot. But they have no convenient railway stations, unlike Southampton with its parkway, meaning holidaymakers will be able to wave from their cars to the unemployed of Eastleigh as they speed west down the M27. Finally, back to buses. I love them. When I used to go to London, I boarded them all the time, mainly for the veedle thrill of exercising my free senior bus pass, thoughtfully issued by Hampshire County Council, but practicably unusable in the county itself, there being no useful rural buses. But that's for another week.
Belgarm's alternative look at the news this week has three items, the first of which is headed Local Art Collaboration. Hyde writer Jude Hayland and Hyde artist Josephine Chisholm have collaborated on Jude's latest novel, her third, which has recently been published. A long-time admirer of Josephine's work, Jude approached the artist to ask whether she would take on the commission of providing the cover image for Miller Street S22. Set in an urban southwest London street, the novel spans 12 months from the autumn of 2005 to the summer of 2006, with the climax of the story taking place during the centenary street party. Jude felt instinctively that Josephine's style and attention to small detail would perfectly capture the tone and mood that she wanted to convey from the moment potential readers saw the cover and is delighted with the result. And that is accompanied by an image of the cover of Miller Street, SW22, where a street party is taking place.
The second Belgarum is headed Rockstar's New Media Platform. He is one of the most successful rock musicians who grew up in Hampshire. But Frank Turner has turned his attention to something different over the last month or so. Belgarum recently discovered the singer-songwriter's TikTok account, where he posts himself singing, telling historical facts, and making a fuss of his cat. Since posting his first video on February the 22nd, Frank, originally from Meanstoke, has gained a following of about 5,000 people. Collectively, his 17 videos have been liked 14,300 times. Throughout his posts, you can see him get to grips with the social media app, where users can only post 60-second clips. It may be a fix for fans during lockdown, but Belgarum wonders when he will be touring next. Frank's user handle is @FrankTurnerOfficial. That's all one word.
And the third item is headed Chronicle Sees Global Attention and takes us back to Greta Thunberg. The Hampshire Chronicle has garnered worldwide attention following reports surrounding Winchester University's statue of Greta Thunberg. Last week, this paper ran an article with readers' reaction about the £23,760 bronze cast, which was unveiled outside the West Downs Centre on Tuesday. The majority of readers criticised the sculpture of the Swedish activist, saying she had no connection with Winchester, and also suggesting that Big Issues seller Kev Colick would have been a better fit. These comments included, "What a total waste of money," and "Total waste of money, I wonder whose," that's spelt WHO'S, "bright idea that was, sick." This criticism and the Chronicle's reporting such comments was picked up by newspapers and its websites across the world, such as the New York Post, the Toronto Sun, and the Indian Times Post, to name just a few. The Spectator even picked up the story with the headline, Winchester University's Greta Thunberg statue is a shameless PR stunt.
And now we come to lighting up time. Lighting up time ends on Friday, the 22nd of April at 6:40 a.m. and begins at 7:39 p.m. On Thursday, the 8th of April, it ends at 6:27 a.m. and begins at 7:49 p.m. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick.
Now we continue with items of general news, beginning with our selection of snippets from the sticks, those short pieces of news from the parishes surrounding Winchester.
I hope they don't mind being
firstly
called of the sticks.
Well, that's what we're doing. Firstly, the organisers of Eastern Flower Festival have decided to postpone this year's event due to the uncertain COVID roadmap. The festival will now take place between June the 16th and 19th, 2022, when organisers hope that all restrictions will have been lifted. There will be an update later this year. In Sparsholt, work has started to prepare a replanting plan, it's difficult to say, to replace the trees lost during the felling at Ham Green. New trees will replace those cut down during phase one of the scheme. Most of this work was done in the triangle of trees at the western end of Ham Green, behind Ham Green Cottage, which equated to the loss of 12 large ash trees, together with some smaller items of collateral damage. Between 20 and 30 trees and bushes are being proposed to replant this area of the village. A section of the parish newspaper said, "We would like some help with deciding what species should be considered and what size of tree we should be purchasing. So we are hoping to get some advice and support from Hampshire Arboretum, who helped us with the original tree condition survey in June 22. We need some time to finalise our replanting and source the supply of the required trees and bushes, so we'll probably carry out the actual replanting during a more suitable winter period." In Cheriton, the annual meeting of the parish council will be held on Tuesday, April the 27th, from 7 p.m. in the village hall. The parish council says this is a chance for villagers to speak to councillors, raise issues that are of concern, and any matters they feel needs addressing by the council. If you have any thoughts you would like to share regarding traffic through the village, planning, litter, play area, or any other local subject, get in touch with us. The parish clerk, Claire Cholerton, can be contacted on 07726 171 980. That's 07726 171 980. And in Sutton Scotney, the Boaz project, which is based there, will welcome back members from April the 7th, with weekly COVID testing to keep everyone safe. Ahead of the reopening, the project is calling for volunteers. Anyone who has a skill they would like to share and would like experience of support in the area of learning difficulties should call 01962 761 749. That's 01962 761 749. Or email admin@boazproject, that's one word, boazproject.co.uk.
And Alsford, Cheriton and Bishop Sutton have been pretty active, or will be going to be pretty active. There are quite a few announcements here. Alsford Country Market will be reopening its doors on Thursday, April the 15th, at 7:30 a.m. in the new Alsford District Community Centre on West Street. Organisers promise lots of delicious cakes, savouries, preserves and eggs, as well as plants ready to brighten up and bloom in your garden. They emailed, "We look forward to seeing all our regular customers and hopefully some new ones too." The car park at Alsford Railway Station is to be short stay only after the City Council entered into a new lease with the Midhants Railway, which owns part of the site. It means the car park will still be managed as a single entity. City Council Cabinet Member Martin Todd has agreed that the pricing structure will match that of the Midhants Railway while allowing space in central Alsford for season ticket holders, he agreed. New signage will ensure visitors and residents are aware of the location of the short and the long stay parking. The location of electric vehicle charging points will be reviewed. Council officers will seek to ensure the provision for vans to park with season tickets, preferably through agreement with Midhants Railway. Alsford Town Council is asking for information about the family of a man commemorated at Stratton Bates Recreation Ground. On its website, the council states, "We are appealing for information as to the whereabouts of any family members of Mr. Newton Dickinson, who lived from 1895 to 1977 and has a memorial plaque on the now defunct water fountain at Stratton Bates Recreation Ground. If you have any information, email deputyclerk@newalsfordtc.gov.uk. Civic chiefs in Alsford were set to approve Alsford Pigs Association hosting a chili festival at Albury Car Park on Saturday, July the 17th. The Town Council was meeting on Tuesday evening and was also asked to approve the refurbishment of Cogswell Memorial off the Soak to mark the American pilot's heroism in 1943 in steering his stricken bomber away from the town.
Now back to the main pages of the newspaper, and the first item is headed "Growing Support for Cycling Charter to Improve Travel Across City." More than 350 people and almost 60 organisations have signed the Winchester Cycling Charter, launched by Cycle Winchester 1 month ago. The charter has attracted a broad alliance of cyclists, businesses, professional organisations and leading players in the fields of health, faith and education. The charter calls on community leaders to make better provision for cycling as a way of travelling around the city. "It isn't anti-car," says organiser John Arthur of Cycle Winchester. "Most cyclists are drivers as well, but we just like to see changes that encourage more cycling and help make it a safe and practical way to get round Winchester." Alex Fitzgerald Barron, Clinical Director of Winchester City Primary Care Network, says, It wasn't a difficult decision for us to get behind the charter. We are in the midst of a health crisis, both physical and mental. Enabling more people to cycle is a win-win. It improves our mental and physical well-being, whilst also reducing the harm from breathing polluted air. Sarah Duck, head teacher at St Bride's Primary School, added, "No one will have missed the increased number of very young cyclists and families venturing out into the streets during lockdown. I would love to see safer streets so that more parents would see cycling as an obvious option for the school run. It would be a great investment in our children's future." The charter sets out the vision of a Winchester where children can safely cycle to school, people can cycle to work, residents can ride their bikes to the shops, pubs and leisure venues, and people of all ages and abilities feel confident to be on the road. Reports show that walking and cycling improvements can increase retail spending by up to 30%, and that cyclists typically visit high streets 50% more times than drivers. Internet shopping and the COVID panic have created exceptional pressures on the high street, comments Mike Fowkes of Kingsgate Books and Prints. It's more important than ever to enhance our city centre, to create attractive space to visit, shop and spend time in. Making Winchester easier to cycle around is part of that improvement. It also helps keep the streets moving for essential journeys. The aim of the Charter is to show that the majority of people in Winchester support moves to make it more cycling friendly. They want to persuade the city and county councils to make decisions that deliver this better future for everyone. To sign the charter, go to winchestercyclingcharter.org.uk. And that's accompanied by a photograph of a lady cycling along the road with two children looking very happy.
Centre could kill off small providers. A community watchdog is concerned that Winchester's new leisure centre could kill off smaller enterprises. The facility in Bar End will provide swimming classes on a scale three times larger than River Park. But Emma Back of Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust has urged city councillors to be careful. She said that this will upset the ecosystem with other providers in the city. Speaking at the town forum, she said, "We heard at the Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre open forum last night that the operator plans on tripling the size of its own swimming lesson programme rather than letting swim schools hire out the facilities. Those swim schools, including Winchester City Penguins, will need your support as city councillors to make sure they survive and thrive. Other small enterprises and small gyms will also need your support so the community can continue to have access to a range of quality local providers." Council officer Richard Botham said that he was unable to comment directly at the meeting. He said that a written response on the matter would be sent to Ms. Back soon. Ms. Back also questioned if play areas are still a priority of the council, as the play area improvement plan has been removed from the list of work. She said, "When discussing protecting open space last summer at the town forum, we mentioned play facilities for older adults as well as play areas for small children. As you know, multi-use game areas, also known as moogas, are used by all ages and they take a hybrid form. The best local examples are at Eversley Park in Kingsworthy and the court in Oliver's Battery, though both of these are out of town. Moogas at North Walls and Westman Road in Wick were removed to make room for a skate park and housing, respectively. There are no moogas in the north part of town." Ms. Back suggested that the council should refresh the mooga in Highcliffe, replace it at River Park with an upgraded version, and add a half forecourt play area in Dean Lane Park or St. Matthew's Field in Wick. She said that these three improvements, alongside the creation of a mooga in Kings Barton, would mean every resident in Winchester would be within a 15 to 20 minute walk of one. Mr. Botham said he will look into whether the play area improvement plan will return. Councillor Jamie Scott, who represents the Stanmore ward, said, "Over a number of years, Emma has really championed sports facilities in the district. Having facilities in an area such as Stanmore does provide excellent provision for children and young people. People think play areas are mainly aimed at 0 to 12-year-olds, but getting the balance between them and the teens is the key."
No new cases reported on Tuesday. Five areas of the Winchester district are seeing rises in the number of new cases of COVID, but it has virtually disappeared in eight other areas of the district. And on Tuesday, no new cases were reported by Public Health England for the first time in at least 6 months. Two more schools have been affected by COVID since reopening earlier this month, with newly reported cases at Henry Beaufort Secondary in Hairstock and Shepherdstown Special School in Compton. They join Sunhill Infants in Alresford, King's Secondary in Winchester, Mitchell Dever Primary and St John the Baptist Primary in Maltham Chase. Figures for the past few days show that the numbers of COVID cases are edging up, although the increases are very small. For the first time since January the 14th, Hampshire as a whole has seen an increase in the last 7 days from 430 cases to 431. But no deaths have been reported in the Winchester district for 27 days. The mini hotspot of South Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Mitchell Dever has been persisting now for more than 2 weeks. Figures released this afternoon, that's when this was done on Tuesday or Wednesday, figures released this afternoon show that there have been 11 new cases in the last 7 days to Thursday, March the 25th, a rise of one for a rolling average of per 100,000 people of 187, far above the national average. There have been small increases in three other areas. Bishop's Waltham and Waltham Chase, 3 cases, up 1. Winchester West, that's Full Flood and Week, 5 cases, up 3. Oliver's Battery and Hursley, 3 cases, up 1. No new cases reported across the district on Tuesday keep the number of people affected since the start of the pandemic to 4,889. The 8 areas where there have been fewer than 3 cases in the last 7 days to March the 25th are Winchester East, Winchester Central and South, Winchester North and Sparsholt, Stanmore, Springvale and Itchen Abbas, Colden Common and Twyford, Alresford and Swanmore, Hambledon and Westmeon. In the 7 days to Tuesday, there have been 23 new cases, down from the previous week's 48. On Monday, there was only one COVID patient at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, with 10 in Basingstoke and 1 in Andover, 12 in total. The previous Monday, there had been 16, so that's a 25% drop.
Yes, the percentages sort of get larger as the numbers get smaller. We have schoolgirl sets up stall to treat vaccine team. You are never too young to do a good deed. That is what Alresford youngster Eve Hall has proved after donating treats to Winchester's vaccination clinic. For weeks, the schoolgirl set up a stall outside her house, selling toys and painted wooden ornaments she had made to raise funds. Judy Hillier, who is part of the team at the Holiday Inn Vaccination Centre in Maughan Hill, said, "The nurses, doctors and voluntary admin staff from the YMCA and local Rotary were so thrilled to be thought of and for all the lovely sweets and cakes she bought for us. I have the little girl's name and permission from her mum to share these photos. The little girl's name is Eve Hall and she lives in Alresford. She thought the idea up herself, made everything and set a stall up outside her house. She wanted to thank us for helping to vaccinate everyone locally. Her mum is a nurse and her parents are happy for her photo and details to be used, and there is indeed a photograph of her with 3 of the staff at the vaccination clinic, and she must be about 10 or 11, I think. Lovely little girl.
Plea to reconsider multi-storey plans. It seems that Winchester City Council is pressing on with a new multi-storey despite objections from nearby residents. Ken Day, who lives in Domham Road, has criticised civic chiefs over the car park plans for Barfield Close. If the structure is completed, it will stand at around 15 metres tall with space for 287 vehicles on the former Voltec site. But Mr. Day believes the council has missed out crucial steps in its planning process and has overlooked the opinions of the local community. He also thinks that groundworks have already begun. No attempt has yet been made by Winchester City Council to respond to the particular objections by Domer Road residents, who will be closest to the new multi-storey and most affected, said Mr. Day. There is evidence the building that there is evidence that due process was not followed when the Voltex building was demolished and the site flattened. Also that the ecology and environment were not properly considered when the former Voltex site was awarded planning permission for the change of use and single-storey car parking. As part of the ecology requirements, bat surveys are an absolute requirement, particularly when bats are known to be in the vicinity. Winchester City Council seem to have declared themselves void of this important commitment. Mr. Day spotted a cherry pecker on the site earlier this month. He added, "We have asked for 3 scaffold towers to illustrate the height of the building on the west boundary. So far, a cherry picker appeared over this last weekend, but has since gone. Not even sure it was at the right height." A spokesperson for Winchester City Council has written to the Chronicle regarding Mr. Day's concerns. They said, "The planning application submitted for the former Voltex site has sought to address the views and concerns of residents in relation to this development. The plans for the park and ride facilities were adapted following virtual engagement meetings with local residents and organisations, including Domham Road residents. This work is part of the implementation of the Winchester Movement strategy. The submitted plans incorporated this feedback and included changes to cover points such as additional park and ride spaces at Bar End, providing screening from Domham Road, low-intensity and bat-friendly lighting, and designing a building which will be a lower height than the previous structure. The application will be considered by the Council's Planning Committee at the end of April."
And another Council thing, of course, Silver Hill progress despite backlash. Civic chiefs will now press on with the latest Silver Hill plans, despite backlash at a recent meeting. Last week, Cabinet signed off the proposals, meaning work in the city centre can begin, starting with King's Walk. But at the meeting, members heard from former City Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who shared his concern over the scheme. Councillor Kelsey Lurney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "The proposals for this crucial city centre site will bring so much to the lives of local people, creating new places to live, work, enjoy, and boosting the existing high street. The decisions made at our cabinet meeting mark an important step forward in making the vision for the site a reality and delivering what people have told us they want to see here. There is work still to be done, but we are now a significant step closer to achieving this. We are so looking forward to getting started on some of the most exciting elements of bringing this site back to life, starting with King's Walk and a fantastic new interim public space on the site of the old Friars Gate Medical Centre." Extinction Rebellion also criticised the plans for city centre buses, saying there should be a central hub instead of scattering bus stops across the city centre, making it harder for people to make connections. Councillor Martin Todd said that was only a temporary measure. "The plans have been made following feedback received from the public on the proposals, which include creating a vibrant mixed-use development with high-quality new homes, flexible workspaces, a thriving nighttime economy, and beautiful public spaces." Consultation ran from November the 11th, 2020, to January the 12th, 2021, with over 2,500 people visiting the virtual exhibition, over 100 attending an online consultation session, and over 300 people completing a feedback questionnaire.
Future of park is in residents' hands. The future of North Walls Recreation Ground is in the hands of residents across the district. That is the message from Winchester City Council, with consultations set to begin in May. A town forum heard that all residents will have their say on the matter, and not just those living in the city. Speaking at the forum, Councillor Eleanor Bell says there's a lot of interest about the North Walls and River Park area. Leaving the building aside for now, what is there in terms of provision? A lot of people are interested in perhaps seeing open water swimming, possibly a Lido, possibly a tent-only campsite, even a youth hostel. All sorts of provision that needs further discussion. We need to look beyond cutting the grass and maintaining the building. We need input on what will go forward with North Walls. Strategic Director Richard Botham said that consultation will start immediately after the local elections on May the 6th. Comments from the public will shape a report that will be presented to a future town forum. This will be open to all residents of the district, not just those living in the city, he said.
Winchester radio station wins national plaudits. Winchester Radio had two reasons to celebrate at this year's National Hospital Radio Awards. The volunteer-led station won the Recognising Innovation category, whilst Chairman Anna O'Brien topped the Best Female Presenter competition. The charity also made the top 10 shortlist in three other categories: Best Speech Package or Special Event, Best Male Presenter, George Kusev, and Station of the Year. Anna O'Brien said, "The team have worked tirelessly throughout the pandemic with no break in service, giving their time and skills for free to support the patients, the hospital, and the wider Winchester community, including those in need and who are vulnerable, or those experiencing social isolation, loneliness, or illness. We all care passionately about helping others, so it's wonderful and incredibly humbling that our charity, Winchester Radio, has been recognised in this year's National Hospital Radio Awards for our volunteering efforts." The annual National Hospital Radio Awards are organised by the Hospital Broadcasting Association and judged by media and radio professionals. Nigel Dallard, one of Winchester Radio's trustees, said, "It's really pleasing that the brave decision we took a few years ago to take the station in an innovative new direction has been recognised with this award. Like all charity trustees, we had a duty to think strategically about the best way for the charity to deliver its public benefit. Back in 2013, the charity was facing an uncertain future. But now, whilst hospital patients remain an important part of our audience, we have a new challenge to help those living in and around Winchester to live healthy, active, socially engaged lives, with a focus on positive ageing and trying to keep them out of hospital. And we have a larger volunteer team with a new impetus, keen to help us meet that challenge." This year's ceremony took place online.
Beauty spot car parks may close due to dog walkers. Car parks at a local beauty spot could be shut off toward... Car parks at local beauty spot could be shut to ward off hugely detrimental dog walkers. A letter seen by the Chronicle has revealed plans to reduce the number of parking spots at Farley Mount near Winchester. It states that some car parks will be closed in a trial because professional dog walkers are deterring residents from using the land. Previous landlords have, through their good intentions, allowed the opening up of numerous car parks at the site, which have clearly but unintentionally made Farley Mount a destination venue for visitors from far and wide, says the letter, written by Chairman of Hursley Parish Council, Councillor David Killeen. One particular issue is the regular use of the land by professional dog walking businesses. Not only are commercial activities such as this not permitted to take place at Farley Mount under the terms of the current lease, but the consequences of this use are hugely detrimental in terms of both the mess that is left behind and the ability for others to use and enjoy the site while large volumes of dogs run loose. The landlord has received numerous comments from local people that the number of professional dog walkers using the site is actively deterring local people from visiting the site. It adds the plan is to initially trial a couple of car park closures. The land in question is owned by South Lynch Estate and managed by Hampshire County Council alongside the Forestry Commission. It is unclear which car parks will be closed during the trial. County Councillor Edward Heron seemed to contradict the letter in his statement to the Chronicle, saying full consultation is necessary before making any changes. He said, "We are working closely with the landowners of Farley Mount and the Forestry Commission to look into concerns about issues relating to an increased level of use at the site. These conversations are still at an exploratory stage about possible solutions and no decisions have been made. Any future proposals for change would need full consultation with the local community, including the parish council. This is a popular walking spot, and we want to work with the local community to ensure it can meet the needs of all users, including dog walkers, while preserving and protecting the natural environment." George Rees of South Lynch Estate added, "In regard to Farley Mount, the landowner and the council have been discussing how it can be best managed going forward to limit the damage that is being suffered to the site from increased amounts of use. These discussions are ongoing, but a solution needs to be found addressing the ongoing damage and the financial and ecological cost of maintaining the site for future enjoyment." County and former Winchester City Councillor Jan Warwick said she is concerned that vehicles will end up parking on the verges. She said, "I'm sure Hampshire County Council would consult with the public before making any change to the car parks. I would be concerned about vehicles parking on verges and causing more damage and congestion. At weekends, all car parks are full."
Garden campaign to bring back beetles. And at the top of this is an enormous picture of a male stag beetle. He's looking really quite scary. Hampshire residents are being urged to give a helping hand to wildlife. Gardeners across the county are being called upon to create habitats for insects, which are a vital part of every healthy garden. Beetles have been praised by the Royal Horticultural Society and the Wildlife Trusts as they launch 2021's Wild About Gardens campaign. According to the two charities, providing a patch for beetles, including ladybirds, ground beetles and rose chafers, is a great way to encourage balance in the garden and boost biodiversity. Many species are reportedly under threat from habitat loss, pesticide use and climate change. The UK has more than 4,000 beetle species, and although a handful may eat plants, many are predators, pollinators and decomposers, feeding both the soil and larger garden visitors. Ladybirds help gardeners by eating aphids, while some ground beetles feed on vine weevil grubs and water beetles and keep mosquito larvae under control in ponds.
Notorious manhole cover is fixed after sleepless nights. It has been ruining sleeping patterns for more than 2 years, but the noisy manhole cover in North Walls has finally been fixed, with residents now living a much quieter life. Julia Klein, one of the main advocates for the repair work, said she had risked her life to take a protest photo. And there is a photo of Julie sitting in the middle of the road next to the manhole cover. Doesn't seem to be any traffic at all. Before the fix, she told the Chronicle, the council must have 40 to 50 complaints. We simply cannot sleep. And I've written to our councillor, Dominic Hiscox. I've written to the Hampshire Roads. I've written to Hampshire Health and Safety. I've written to Hampshire Streetworks Coordinator. But no one is taking the level of this 24-hour, 365-day-a-year noise disturbance seriously. Every single time a car goes down North Walls, and there are tens of thousands, first their front set of wheels hits the loose metal drain cover, then their back wheels hit it every 2 seconds of every minute of every day, and it's as if two metal dustbin lids are being lifted and heavily clashed together. Karen Bosher of Cuts in North Walls supported Julia's campaign, describing the noise as infuriating. The faster the speed of the vehicle, the louder the noise, added Julia. All this in the middle of a residential area, and still Southern Water, who own the cover, have done nothing. But Hampshire Roads insist that complaints have been forwarded to them. Just days after her email to this newspaper, which was also sent to a city councillor, Southern Water contractors were sent to fix the cover. Julia said, after years of suffering, I'm delighted. I'm absolutely over the moon to say that a team of subcontractors for Southern Water turned up and drilled and dug and fully replaced the drain cover. I made them coffee and chocolate biscuits every hour as they worked. And she also took a photograph of the cover being fixed, which is printed in the newspaper.
More than 100 animals affected by rubbish. More than 100 animals are affected by litter in Hampshire last year. New figures have revealed. Despite people being in lockdown for many months, the RSPCA still received more than 10 calls a day across the county, across the country, about animals affected by litter. The calls included a duck tangled in a medical face mask, a baby hedgehog with plastic wrapped round her throat, a fox with his head caught in a Cornish pasty wrapper, and a gannet entangled in plastic. Now the animal welfare charity is calling on the public to do their bit and join the Great British Spring Clean. The animal welfare charity is urging people to help protect animals by picking up any litter they see lying around, as well as ensuring they take their litter home with them or disposing of it properly and responsibly. Head of the RSPCA's Wildlife Department, Adam Grogan, said, "Our staff deal with thousands of incidents every year where animals have been impacted by litter, and they're the ones that we know of. I'm sure for every animal we are able to help, there are many that go unseen, unreported, and may even lose their lives. Litter is one of the biggest hazards our wildlife faces today, and the pandemic has just added to the problem, with many disposable masks being discarded on the ground. These are a new danger to animals, and we've been called out to rescue animals like ducks and gulls caught up in the mask's elastic straps. That is why we are calling on the public to get involved in the Great British Spring Clean."
Protesters march against police bill. Crowds gathered in Winchester to protest against sexual violence and the government's controversial new policing bill. Protesters congregated at the Buttercross before making their way to the Hampshire Constabulary's operational headquarters in Tower Street on Saturday. It follows other Kill the Bill protests held last week and comes in the wake of violent scenes in Bristol, where 10 people were arrested following conflicts between protesters and the police. The demonstration in Winchester heard cries of "Kill the Bill" from protesters as they marched through the city centre, making as they march through the city centre between the police building and King Alfred's statue. Demonstrators were also out calling for the street to be safe for women following the disappearance of Sarah Everard. While many protesters remained peaceful, some decided to make more of an impact by standing in the road and blocking the traffic. One protester said, "I'm really disgusted by what is in the police bill. I feel this is like the start of Nazi Germany if our freedoms get totally eroded. We will find it hard to get them back later." And demonstrator Ob said the bill is essentially fascism and that politicians are using their powers to stop protests. She also said they wanted to highlight it so that women, to highlight the fact that women are not safe on our streets. Unlike in other cities, the police presence appeared to be small in Winchester, with only a few officers remaining at a distance from the protests. The Police Crime and Sentencing and Courts Bill would give police in England and Wales more power to impose conditions on non-violent protests, including those deemed too noisy or a nuisance, with those convicted liable to fines or jail terms.
Meet the new High Sheriff of Hampshire. As part of a tradition dating back to Saxon times, a new High Sheriff has been appointed for Hampshire. Philip Sykes has been announced as the new High Sheriff for Hampshire, an independent, non-political royal appointment for a single year. The origins of the office date back to Saxon times, when the Shire Reeve was responsible for maintaining law and order within the shire or county. In the past, it also involved collecting taxes due to the Crown. However, the role has evolved, with high sheriffs today typically supporting crime prevention agencies, the emergency services, and the voluntary sector. Mr. Sykes was sworn in by the Honourable Mrs. Johanna Justice Cutts during a ceremony at Winchester Crown Court. Mr. Sykes said, "I'm enormously looking forward to my year as High Sheriff, and like the rest of the country, am hoping that the end of lockdown is in sight so that I can fulfil the role to the best of my ability. It is a tremendous privilege to support the Crown and judiciary across Hampshire, and to lend my support across our vibrant and diverse communities." He moved to Hampshire in 1995 and now lives with his wife Caroline in Steventon, Jane Austen's birthplace, near Basingstoke. Mr. Sykes is a chartered accountant and currently works as a senior consultant with the Restructuring Advisory Group at RSM Southampton. Meanwhile, Caroline works as a GP in Basingstoke. They have three grown-up children who live in London. He is a trustee of several local charities, including the Brendan Care Foundation, which runs 10 care homes in the south of England. High sheriffs receive no pay, and their expenses are not paid by the public. And there is a picture of Philip Sykes looking very smart in a special uniform, I think, with a lacy jabot and also a badge hanging round his neck, with Mrs. Justice Cutts at the Winchester Law Courts.
Peregrine family to expand. Winchester's most famous family could be growing yet again. The resident Peregrine Falcons, Winnie and Chester, could have four new chicks to care for by the end of next month. Winnie laid her first egg a week ahead of schedule on March the 10th. After an agonising 5 days, she laid the second on March the 15th, and since then two more have arrived, the last on last Sunday, said Keith Betton, chairman and county recorder of Hampshire Ornithological Society. She has now started full-time incubation, which will see her keeping the eggs warm for a full month with just a few breaks. During this time, Chester will occasionally take a turn covering the eggs, and we have been pleased to see him a few times this week. We think the hatch date will be somewhere around April the 22nd, 23rd, because of the delay in Winchester laying her second and third eggs. Last year, Winnie laid 5 eggs and all 5 chicks survived, which is uncommon. People watching the cameras at night have commented that although Winnie does seem to sleep, she's also very alert, only closing her eyes for a few seconds, said Keith. Peregrines at the nest mostly sleep with one eye open and only half their brain is alert, while the other half is asleep. It allows Winnie to spring into action quickly if a threat approaches. And there's a photograph, the obligatory photograph, of a falcon, peregrine falcon, sitting on its perch, but there's no indication of whether this is Winnie or Chester.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams.
And from us, Farah and Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. Thank you.
Thank you.